Wild Time online only here on Indiemedia.de with myself, Thomas Janak. As promised on the last edition, we're here at the IFI, the Irish Film Institute in Dublin, because there's a screening of the movie The End of the Line. And I'm also having an interview with the producer, Claire Lewis, a little later. So we're here and it's going ahead. You can actually check us out on Wild Time on 96fm.blogspot.com. That's www.wildtimeon96fm.blogspot.com. And also if you just type in Wild Time in the media, you'll find all the things that we did there. Wild Time is a animal welfare / world conservation show. And this is the 53rd edition of this very show. You can check us out on www.wildtimeon96fm.blogspot.com, and you can also find us on Facebook on www.facebook.com/wildtimeradio. That's www.facebook.com/wildtimeradio. Hi there, may I ask you for Irish radio, what film are you going to watch?
Fish Tank.
Okay, I hope it's as good as they say it is.
They say it's very good, so yeah. I'm expecting it to be good.
Good, brilliant. Well, you know, it has won a few prizes, so you usually can't go wrong with these things.
Well, prizes don't always follow, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's nice if they have them. Yeah.
If I like it, that's all that counts.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers.
You're welcome.
Well, although the film Fish Tank is absolutely not related to the film The End of the Line, which is a film about our oceans, at least there are people here, you know, giving the IFI some money to keep the cinemas open. You know, the IFI is renowned for screening movies that I wouldn't say they wouldn't stand a chance in sort of commercial cinemas, but they're usually more intellectual, and it's nice to have films come down here. For instance, there's a new film coming on the 25th of September called Creation, and it says here how he saw the world changed it forever. It's a true story of Charles Darwin, and as most of you know, it's the 200th anniversary of him, you know, even sort of talking about evolution, and that changed quite a thing and quite a bit. You know, sometimes the funny thing is, if you are the guy, you know, with the headset on and the microphone in your hand, people walk the other way when they see you. I don't know, it's got something to do with the microphone. I'm sure it's not me, you know, because I can be quite a nice guy. There are some people, and I think I'm going to just ask them, hi folks, may I ask you a quick question? What film are you going to see tonight?
None, I'm just going to have a pint.
Okay, so you're not enjoying a movie at all?
Not tonight.
Okay,
no.
Any of you guys?
No. Okay.
Thanks. Hi there. May I ask you, what film are you going to watch tonight?
I'm not waiting for the film. I'm waiting for a friend.
Oh, okay. that's a good excuse. Thanks. So, Claire Lewis, the producer of the movie, has just arrived. And, you know, my girlfriend Nicole is going to take a picture of her, and she looks exactly like an activist, you know, and so does Nicole, and so do I, but she really looks like an activist, and I mean this in a nice way, because I think we're beautiful people, you know, but you know, sometimes when you have people that are sort of produce a movie, you think they sort of look like, you know, like business people, and again, you know, producing a movie has a lot to do with, you know, getting the funds and stuff and standing your ground, so she might as well be a businesswoman. But when it comes to the way she looks just like an activist, and I like that. So I think with no further ado, here's the interview between Claire Lewis, producer of the movie The End of the Line, and myself here tonight at the IFI, the Irish Film Institute for short, in Temple Bar in Dublin. Okay, Claire, for the people that are blissfully unaware of The End of the Line, and I'm sure there are not that many these days, because you did quite a lot. I saw you on Facebook, and I saw you know, people talking about you on MySpace, so that's good, it's really good. But if people haven't got a notion what this film is about, what is it about?
The film is about what we are doing to our oceans, to our marine environment, by taking too many fish out of the sea, commercial fishing. Basically, it's a film us, the consumers, to really wake people up, to show them what's happening out there in the middle of the ocean. You know, it's far away, most people don't care about it, nobody knows about it. And the film is really saying to you, to everybody, look, you know, the ocean belongs to you, it's yours, you've got to look after it. And the rate we're going at the moment, fishing it, if we don't stop and if we don't change the way we do things, our scientists are predicting that we will run out of seafood as we know it in about 50 years' time.
Yeah.
And it's an absolutely terrifying thought. And it's even more terrifying because it's not just about the fact that we rich nations won't have any fish to eat because we can eat something else. The long-term effects and the repercussions of reducing and taking out fish species from the sea is that people who don't have any other source of protein will starve. Mm-hmm. And socially and economically, overfishing has the most devastating consequences. And our film basically is saying, wake up, people on the street, wake up. These oceans belong to you. You've got to look after them.
You know, when it comes to statistics, I mean, I can't help it, you know, being German myself. But when it comes to statistics, because I'm doing this show for 2 years, I was talking to a guy from Sea Life here in Bray in Ireland, and he said we put more waste into the sea than we fish out in our country. You know, that's what he said.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's one of the great myths. One of the myths about the oceans is that pollution is the big issue. Pollution isn't the big issue. Pollution probably accounts for about 9% of the problems with the marine environment. Overfishing is about 40%. Okay. One of the reasons that pollution gets all the headlines is because the fish producers, the fishermen, they don't really want people to know what we are doing to our oceans. It's much easier to blame pollution. In fact, yes, of course, pollution's a problem, but it's not such a big problem as overfishing. Because once you take species out, as we've found in Canada, the problem with Canada is they fished out, as you'll see in the end of the line, the Canadians fished out the most abundant cod in the world. You know, cod that was so thick that legend had it you could walk on their backs in the water. Gone, and they haven't come back. They closed the cod fishery in 1992. It has never reopened. There are no cod off northern Canada anymore. Now, we cannot afford to do that as a society, as a planet, to the marine ecosystem. Because, you know, it's not just an issue of food security. It's an issue also of what are the long-term effects on the ecosystem of taking out species after species after species. And yes, pollution has a really serious effect on bits of the ocean. The problem with overfishing is it's absolutely global now. Mm. And there isn't a bit of the planet, apart from some areas of the South Pacific, which are still fairly abundant, that doesn't have evidence of overfishing.
And very often when they overfish, it's not like they have too many and give it back to someone. It's you know, apparently, because some people think, oh, well, there's apparently fish on. Yeah, it doesn't. So your call would really be about having it sort of controlled so that fishermen can stay in business and stay alive?
Well, long term, fishermen won't stay in business at all if we carry on as we are. I mean, again, going back to Canada and Newfoundland, 40,000 people lost their jobs when they closed the cod fishery, and they have never returned.
Okay.
Overnight, they lost their jobs. Now, the only future for fishermen and fishing is if we manage our fisheries properly and sustainably. That is the only future. Otherwise, there's nothing. You know, fishermen are great. You say to them, you talk to them about this, they say there's plenty of fish in the sea. But then you say, well, how are your catches? And they all say, oh, they're down. Now, you can't have it both ways.
Mm.
Therefore, long-term, you have to have sustainable fisheries. You have to only catch a very small proportion of your stock, as they do in Alaska, for example. In Alaska, they only catch 10% of the stock. In the North Sea, it's 50% or more.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to manage your fisheries, and long-term, you've got to really designate big areas of the ocean as marine protected areas, no take zones, where no commercial fishing is allowed, where the fish are allowed to come back and regenerate and repopulate.
And do you think this is going to happen? Is there an incentive of people saying, look, you know, it makes sense and let's do this?
It has to happen. I mean, it genuinely does have to happen, or we will have no fish and people will starve. And our scientists, actually, and if you watch the film, you'll see, are very hopeful that once people understand the issue and they understand what's going out there, they will change their habits. They will try and make sure that when they go to a restaurant, they eat sustainably caught fish. Mm. They buy sustainably caught fish. You know, of course, there are large areas of the world where fishermen don't care at all, and illegal fishing and unreported fishing is out of control. Taiwan, China. I mean, it really bad news, those countries, in terms of the fishing they do, illegal fishing.
How dangerous was it for you when you went down there and showed it to them?
We haven't yet. We're doing a Chinese version as we speak. We're doing a Japanese version. We're translating the film into virtually every language so that hopefully it can be seen everywhere. Mm. We didn't individually face any danger. I mean, one of the guys in the film, Roberto Mielgo, who is really, his whole life is now about finding out what's going on with the bluefin tuna. As you know, bluefin tuna is an endangered species. He's had threats from the mafia. I mean, he knows, because of course bluefin tuna in the Mediterranean has serious links with organized crime. We didn't include it in the film for all sorts of reasons. Yeah. But, he's definitely, I mean, he went to a meeting where he had a white flower on his table where he was sitting. But personally, no, we weren't in any danger. Mm.
Because the problem that sort of that I witnessed just doing this show over the last 2.5 years is how many people are quite ignorant about it. And even when you say to them, do you want to know how the fish has been sourced? Mm-hmm. They say no. They say no. And then you have the other side of people that says, look, it's the recession is upon us, so we go to Tesco's. Mm-hmm. So it's all these big chains that probably are responsible for lots of damage there.
Well, ironically, and again, making this film, I've had to change my views about all sorts of things. Before I made the film, before I read Charles Clover's book, I was just a normal consumer. I loved food, I loved fish, shellfish. I knew cod was in a bit of trouble, but that was it, until I read Charles Clover's book, and that, overnight, it changed my life. It changed what I thought, it changed what I ate. I stopped eating certain fish at that point, and I've never eaten them since. The answer to your question is, yes, some people don't care. Some people will never care. But actually, what we've discovered is that once people have seen the film, they do care. Yeah, they come up and say to me, I didn't know any of this. Mm. It's like almost everybody's guilty, but they're innocent and guilty. Once they've seen the film...
You can't turn your back on it.
You can't turn your back on it. You are guilty. Yeah. And if you then carry on saying, I don't care, you really are to blame. Yeah. And so actually, what we as filmmakers did is we thought, right, we've just got to get this film out there. You know, we'll just move heaven and earth to make sure that we can get this film out to as many people as possible. They can make up their own minds about whether they believe it or not. Mm. But everybody, virtually everybody, with very few exceptions, come and say, I didn't know that. Thank you.
I mean, you won a few prizes along the way. And also, your film has been likened to films like Earthlings, where basically, that's what be the more vegan take and what's happening on the land. When in fact, everybody sort of agrees that this is one of the most powerful films around. So does that help you when they liken you to other movies, or is that something where you say, we want to be our own thing?
No, it's very helpful. I mean, I think one of the things, we were compared to Rachel Carson's The Silent Spring. And that was kind of absolutely amazing and completely wonderful. I mean, yes, we set out to make what we felt was The Inconvenient Truth of the Sea.
And you probably have.
And we have. And when we showed it at Sundance at the festival in January, The Economist Review said, this is The Inconvenient Truth of the Sea. And in a way, we kind of realized that at some levels anyway, we had done what we set out to do. Our biggest job, of course, the thing about Al Gore's movie is that he had a $15 million marketing budget.
And everybody knows him, the kind of way.
Yeah, and so we've been fighting terrible odds. We've had a fantastic time in England. We've had amazing publicity, an amazing reception for the film. It's still playing in cinemas all over the UK.
But then, in all fairness, I've been living here for 9 years, and what I notice going to the UK quite often, you are 10 years ahead of us when it comes to caring for animals. It is a different animal.
Maybe that's true. I mean, are you talking about here, Ireland, or
here? I talk about here, Ireland, and also parts of Europe.
Yeah.
Even when you look at further field like Bulgaria and Romania and all that, you probably end up there going there anyway. I always ask a question that seems to be a bit silly, but if you could change things overnight, if there's one thing that you think has to change overnight or we're in serious trouble, I know it's difficult to isolate one thing, what would that be?
You have to cut the number of fishing boats. The single most important factor in the whole of this problem is that there are too many fishing boats chasing too few fish. Mm. And overnight, if we could cut the global fishing fleet by about quarter or half, immediately we would go halfway to solving the problem. But it's the most difficult thing to do because it's highly political. It requires some very, very... It requires some very brave politicians who don't care about getting back voted back by their fishing communities. But it's crazy because actually, you know, fishing is a boutique industry in terms of its value. It's absolutely crazy. It really paid to fishermen to prop up fishing could actually run marine protected areas globally. Mm. It's the same amount. So what has to happen is that you have to cut the fishing fleet. You really do. That's the single thing that could happen. If that could happen overnight, we'd be well on the way to solving the problem.
I have one final question because I know you're quite busy here. If you go to a restaurant these days, having you know been down there, you know the movie, and you just you know you must have a gut feeling, you know, that this is a good fish or whatever.
If I go to a restaurant and it's serving fish. My poor family make me go in first and ask all the questions because I'm so embarrassing. First of all, if there's fish on the menu, that there's always unsustainable fish on every menu, apart from restaurants where they say all our fish is sustainably sourced. You then have to ask them where the fish is from, where did they catch it. They have to know the answers. If they can't answer those questions, I don't eat fish there, or I don't eat there. Mm. I eat much less fish than I did. But ironically, you know, going back to something you said earlier, some of the supermarkets is actually probably the least sustainable and least interested in sustainable sourcing of fish. But Waitrose, who is sponsoring the theatrical release of our film, Marks and Spencer's in the UK, Sainsbury's, there are big supermarkets who are making enormous efforts. Yeah.
Which I think is about time, it's the 21st century.
Exactly. You know? Walmart, for example, have undertaken in America that by 2011, all their fresh and frozen wet fish will be MSC certified. McDonald's in the UK is 100% MSC certified. And McDonald's globally is 92% MSC certified.
So they do something right.
they do something right. And it may not be for the right reasons, but it doesn't alter the fact that they're doing the right thing. Yeah. You know, you go down to your local little fishmonger, unfortunately, you are more likely to get unsustainable, illegally caught fish.
To make a living, yeah. That's exactly it.
That's right.
Any news on, I know it's probably a bit early, but any news on DVD releases?
DVD release, hopefully at the end of October. I think that's where beginning of November. That's what we're working towards at the moment. Okay. It's going out on More4 in the UK. It's TV broadcast, which is the part of Channel 4, again at the end of October. So, yes.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you. And I was saying before you came, you know, I said, like, you look like a real activist, even though, you know, but it's brilliant because, you know,
campaigners.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm a pet psychologist and I do radio, but I was saying, you know, that a lot of people, when you think about producers, it is about getting the funding, standing your ground, doing all this, but still you really look like an activist. And so, like, isn't that nice to see that?
But you have to be, because I mean, we all made the film. The film is not about making money. Never going to make any money out of this film, any of us. I mean, we're all working free now. It's about the message. It's about doing what we passionately believed in. And I believe that's why we found it so easy to raise the money, because it wasn't about personal profit. It was about, look, we've just got to tell people what's going on.
And people do realize and recognize honesty when they see it.
They really do. And that's quite gratifying, and it's quite rewarding, actually, even though we're all broke.
Welcome to the club. Thank you so much for talking to me. Thank you. Thanks. Well, wasn't it a lovely interview with Claire Lewis, producer of the movie End of the Line, which is just about to be screened. We're in the cinema now. You know, due to legal reasons, I cannot just switch on the mic and record bits and pieces of the film. You have to see it yourself, for yourself. But, you know, that's life, isn't it? Anyway, you're listening to Wild Time. That's the end of Wild Time. Till next time. Bye-bye.